1. The will to truth, which is still going to tempt us to many a daring exploit, that celebrated truthfulness of which all philosophers up to now have spoken with respect, what questions this will to truth has already set down before us, what strange, serious, dubious questions. There is already a long history of that, and yet it seems that this history has scarcely begun. Is it any wonder that we finally become mistrustful, lose patience, and, in our impatience, turn ourselves around and learn from this sphinx to ask questions for ourselves? Who is really asking us questions here? What is it in us that really wants the truth? In fact, we paused for a long time before the question about the origin of this will, until we finally remained completely and utterly immobile in front of an even more fundamental question. We asked about the value of this will. Suppose we want truth, why should we not prefer untruth and uncertainty, even ignorance? The problem of the value of truth stepped up before us, or are we the ones who stepped up before the problem? Who among us here is Oedipus? Who is the Sphinx? It seems to be a tryst between questions and question marks. And was it possible to believe that we are finally the ones to whom it seems as if the problem has never been posed up to now, as if we are the first ones to see it, to fix our eyes on it, and to dare confront it? For there is a risk involved in this. Perhaps there is no greater risk. 2. How could something arise out of its opposite? For example, truth out of error, or the will to truth out of the will to deception, or selfless action out of self-seeking, or the pure sunny look of the wise man out of greed. Origins like these are impossible. Anyone who dreams about them is a fool, even worse. Things of the highest value must have another appropriate origin. They cannot be derived from this ephemeral, seductive, deceptive, trivial world, from this confusion of madness and desire. Their basis must lie, by contrast, in the womb of being, in the immortal, in hidden gods, in the thing in itself, and nowhere else. This way of shaping an opinion creates the typical prejudice which enables us to recognize once more the metaphysicians of all ages. This way of establishing value stands behind all their logical procedures. From this belief of theirs, they wrestle with their knowledge, with something which is finally, in all solemnity, christened the truth. The fundamental belief of the metaphysicians is the belief in the opposing nature of values. Even the most careful among them has never had the idea of raising doubts right here on the threshold, where such doubts are surely most essential, even when they praise themselves for believing de omnibus dubitandum, it is necessary to doubt everything. For we can doubt, first, whether such an opposition of values exists at all, and second, whether that popular way of estimating worth and that opposition of values, on which the metaphysicians have imprinted their seal, are perhaps only evaluations made in the foreground, only temporary perspectives, perhaps even a view from a corner, perhaps from underneath, a frog's viewpoint, as it were, to borrow an expression familiar to painters. For all the value which the true, genuine, unselfish man may be entitled to, it might be possible that a higher and more fundamental value for everything in life must be ascribed to appearance, the will for deception, self-interest, and desire. It might even be possible that whatever creates the value of those fine and respected things exists in such a way that it is, in some duplicitous way, related to, tied to, intertwined with, perhaps essentially the same as those undesirable, apparently contrasting things. Perhaps. But who is willing to bother with such a dangerous perhaps? For that, we must really await the arrival of a new style of philosopher, the kind who has a different taste and inclination, the reverse of philosophers so far, in every sense, philosophers of the dangerous perhaps. And speaking in all seriousness, I see such new philosophers arriving on the scene. 3. After examining philosophers between the lines with a sharp eye for a sufficient length of time, I tell myself the following, We must consider even the greatest part of conscious thinking among the instinctual activities. Even in the case of philosophical thinking, we must relearn here, in the same way we relearned about heredity and what is innate. Just as the act of birth merits little consideration in the procedures and processes of heredity, so there's little point in setting up consciousness in any significant sense as something opposite to what is instinctual. The most conscious thinking of a philosopher is led on secretly and forced into particular paths by his instincts. Even behind all logic and its apparent dynamic authority stand evaluations of worth, or, putting the matter more clearly, physiological demands for the preservation of a particular way of life. For example, that what is certain is more valuable than what is uncertain, that appearance is of less value than the truth. Evaluations like these could, for all their regulatory importance for us, still be only foreground evaluations, a particular kind of niaisery, stupidity, necessary for the preservation of beings precisely like us. That's assuming, of course, that not just man is the measure of things. 4. For us, the falsity of a judgment is still no objection to that judgment. That's where our new way of speaking sounds perhaps most strange. The question is the extent to which it makes demands on life, sustains life, maintains the species, perhaps even creates species. And as a matter of principle, we are ready to assert that the falsest judgments, to which a priori synthetic judgments belong, are the most indispensable to us, that without our allowing logical fictions to count, without a way of measuring reality against the purely invented world of the unconditional and self-identical, without a constant falsification of the world through numbers, human beings could not live, that if we managed to give up false judgments, it would amount to a renunciation of life, a denial of life. To concede the fictional nature of the conditions of life means, of course, taking a dangerous stand against the customary feelings about value. A philosophy which dares to do that is, for this reason alone, already standing beyond good and evil.